Welcome to Ring of Fire. I'm Farron Cousins. Coming up on today's show, Joe Biden's approval rating has fallen below 40% for the first time. Vice President Kamala Harris's poll numbers are even worse than that. So we're going to talk about why this is happening and what it could mean for next year's midterms. We're also going to talk about Donald Trump's really bad week in the judicial system. Two major legal losses suffered by Donald Trump. We also have Vox policy reporter Jerusalem Demsis here with us to talk about Zillow getting out of the home buying business and what that means for the overall housing market. And we have the wonderful guys from Midas Touched will be joining me a little bit later to talk about the messaging problem that the Democratic Party has and how they are trying to correct that. So don't go anywhere. Ring of Fire starts right now. So obviously, look, we got to start with the biggest news of the week here. And clearly, if you've been watching conservative media, the biggest news of the week is Big Bird. Big Bird from Sesame Street came out and actually encouraged children on social media to get vaccinated. Something that Sesame Street has actually been doing since 1972. So for 49 years, the Muppets have been encouraging children to get vaccinated. And of course, anytime anybody encourages vaccinations, the Republican Party has a collective freakout. Ted Cruz spent last weekend calling Big Bird propaganda. Newsmax host, former Fox News host, Eric Bolling, not only called the Muppets communist, but actually challenged them to a debate. Challenged the Muppets to a debate on his Newsmax program. And then, of course, you had every other conservative freaking out, Fox News attacking the Muppets. In case you're not familiar with this, they're either puppets or, in the case of Big Bird, it's a person in a suit. Okay, they're children's characters. But what's happening here is Republicans, conservatives, all of these whack jobs over on the right would rather talk about stupid issues, things that are really non-issues to begin with, than they would talking about real issues. It's exactly what we saw in the Virginia governor's race. They wanted to talk about critical race theory. They didn't want to talk about actual policy. They wanted to talk about this boogeyman culture war issue out there. And so that's what these Republicans have turned Sesame Street into now. It's not a real thing. Nobody's pushing vaccine mandates for children, at least not right now. It's just that starting this week, late last week, I guess, children age 5 to 11 were eligible to receive the Pfizer vaccine. And that just makes conservatives angry. And for the record, most of these conservatives, people like Ted Cruz railing against Big Bird, Ted Cruz is vaccinated. Most of these Republicans on Fox News are vaccinated. They have a vaccine mandate in place. I don't know about Eric Bolling, but I do know that Newsmax also is adhering to the vaccine mandate. They sent a memo out recently. So most, if not all, of these conservatives railing against Big Bird for encouraging kids to get vaccinated are vaccinated themselves. But what they're telling their audience is do as I say, not as I do. Oh, we're trying to protect your freedom. We don't want to live under a mandate society, they tell us. No, we're fighting a deadly pandemic. A pandemic that even though it is getting better here in the United States to a degree, it's still not gone. And Republicans should be the ones encouraging the vaccinations. Report came out this week showing that counties that voted for Donald Trump in 2020 have a COVID rate 3 times higher than counties that voted for Joe Biden in 2020. I mean, at this point, being a Republican should be considered a pre-existing condition. Right? It is apparently a comorbidity with COVID. And for all of these Republicans out there attacking vaccines, attacking Sesame Street, attacking vaccine mandates, you guys ought to know you're putting your own voters into an early grave. And I know you think you're going to make big gains in the midterms, but how is that even going to be possible when you are killing so many of your own voters by telling them to not do the very thing that you have already done? That's what makes no sense. They're preying on people's fears. They're buying into this anti-vax propaganda. and it's killing their voters. So we'll see next year how that plays out. One thing I will say that Republicans do have going for them ahead of the midterms is President Joe Biden's approval rating. Polls this week revealed that Joe Biden's approval rating has now fallen to 38%. And that is still 10 percentage points higher than Vice President Kamala Harris's approval rating. She is sitting at 28%. Furthermore, another poll that came out this week from CNN said that 58% of voters in America do not believe that Joe Biden is taking the issues that they care about seriously. And the number one issue they said in this poll is the economy. Number two is the pandemic. And I'm going to push back on that a little bit. And it is weird. I know people who are regular viewers of my videos on YouTube understand I'm not the biggest Joe Biden fan there is. I've been very critical of him. I feel fairly critical of him. You know, I've been fair with it. But to have a 38% approval rating, I feel, is absolute nonsense. We have supply chain shortages right now. A lot of that due to the fact that during the pandemic, demand slowed. Backlogs, you know, stockpiles essentially, of goods here in the United States slowly dwindled down. But demand did slow down, so production slowed down. And of course, with the pandemic, people not able to go to work, production slowed even further. So then, once we came out of the pandemic, which we're not out of it, but once America pretended we were out of the pandemic, demand skyrockets. And when demand skyrockets, but production has not yet increased and there's no backlogs or stockpiles for people to pull from, you're going to have supply chain shortages. That is what is happening in the United States today, folks. That is why we have ships waiting to get into port to deliver these goods, because there was a sudden surge in demand. So everything comes in and they're trying their best to get it worked out. Is it all Biden's fault? Absolutely not. Is it all Trump's fault? Nope. This was a natural economic event. It is unfortunate. It is not pleasant to deal with by any stretch of the imagination. But to blame this on Joe Biden is absolutely unfair. However, it's a lot easier for politicians and pundits to blame it on Joe Biden than to explain to you what I just explained. And if you've read any kind of economic analysis on the supply chain shortage, all of them are going to tell you the same thing I did. That's where this comes from. This is not the president's fault. This is not Pete Buttigieg's fault. This is because demand dropped, stockpiles were depleted, demand rose before production could resume. That's the situation we're in. That's the plain and simple black and white. But nobody's explaining that part of it, I feel. You know, this should be what national news is talking about. Instead, you got Wolf Blitzer tweeting out pictures of gas prices saying, oh no, gas prices are out of control. That's not even something we can control. You're feeding into the propaganda there, Wolf Blitzer, which is not surprising whatsoever. I mean, think about this, okay? Because gas prices, the prices of everything, obviously it's something that weighs on this new CNN poll about people thinking Joe Biden doesn't care about the issues. Gas prices rose from $1.07, that was the national average when George W. Bush took office, at its peak during that Bush administration, gas prices, national average, $4.11. They rose by $3.04 on average nationally during the Bush administration. So the fact that they've gone up in some places a dollar, maybe even $1.50, over the last year, that is nothing compared to where we've been. What we need to do is invest in technologies that get us off fossil fuels altogether. Not to mention the fact that the price of this gasoline is not even necessarily set here in the United States. Oil is controlled globally. They can create shortages. They can create surpluses. They do whatever they need to do to make more money. That's what OPEC's job essentially is. And that's what we're dealing with right here in the United States right now. They lost a lot of money during the first year of the pandemic. Fewer people traveling, fewer people flying, fewer people going anywhere. So they slowed oil production. And now the people are back at it again. Same scenario. Demand skyrockets. Supply is lower because, again, production slowed. So prices go up. They'll come back down. They always do. And they'll go back up. They always do. The only way to not be affected by that is for the United States to, one, increase fuel efficiency standards for our vehicles, which Donald Trump tried to kill. He did kill. And two, switch to electric vehicles, which still obviously take fossil fuels from electricity, yada, yada. But that's the way you don't get affected by gas prices. So until we do that as a country, we're always going to be subjected to these wild swings in gas prices. But moving on to other issues, the pandemic is something people say they're not sure if Biden's taking seriously enough. What the hell are you talking about? How is Biden not taking the pandemic seriously? That blows my mind. Biden has put the vaccine mandates in place. We have gotten approval for everyone over the age of 5 years old is now eligible to receive a vaccine here in the United States. Eligible, not necessarily meaning they'll get it or, you know, they have a weakened immune system and they can't physically get it. They're all eligible. That's why I use that word. But either way, that's a remarkable move. Not to mention encouraging people to wear masks, obviously encouraging people to get vaccinated. I don't see how you give Biden bad marks on his handling of the pandemic. I truly don't. The economy, jobs. Okay, you may have a point there. He didn't advocate hard enough for the Build Back Better Act, which actually includes a lot of the funding mechanisms for the infrastructure bill. So without the Build Back Better Act, pieces of that infrastructure bill, which did pass last week, they're not going to be funded, so they're not going to become a reality. That, I agree. Go ahead. Biden should have fought harder for that instead of trying to negotiate with the corporatists. Totally, totally agree with you on that. But to have a 38% approval rating, I don't think that's fair. I really don't. And for Vice President Harris to have a 28% approval rating, why? What has she done to piss people off? I mean, I get that she's typically not out there publicly. She hasn't done a solo press conference since she took office. But 28% approval rating? I would reserve those numbers for people that actively do bad things, not just people who aren't visible. So again, that's also very confusing. But either way you slice it, whether you think the approval ratings are fair, whether you think it's fair that people think he doesn't take their issues seriously, none of that matters because we have midterms coming up in 1 year. And these bad poll numbers for Joe Biden are going to be bad news for Democrats at the polls. So he's going to have to find a way to fix this. He's going to have to deliver for the American public. Give them real things. Because if you do not give them things, if you do not give them results, if you do not do something that changes their lives, Democrats are going to lose big time. Off the top of my head, decriminalizing marijuana nationally, forgiving student loan debt. He can deliver those two things to a degree without the need of Congress. That's what needs to happen. Those are two things he could do by the end of next week if he wanted to. And if he wants Democrats to keep the House and keep the Senate, he needs to seriously consider doing those two things. But enough about the Democrats. What's happening over on the other side? Biden's not the only one having a rough week. Donald Trump has had an even rougher week, suffering two major legal losses this week. On Tuesday evening, Judge Tanya Chutkan, who had been overseeing the lawsuit that Donald Trump had filed to prevent the National Archives from releasing his records to the January 6th committee, ruled that he does not, in fact, get to claim executive privilege. Well, actually, she did say he could claim executive privilege, but that doesn't mean he gets executive privilege. Because as Chutkan explained, presidents are not kings. And you're not the president. Joe Biden is. So Joe Biden ultimately is the individual, as president of the United States right now, who gets to determine what is and what is not covered by executive privilege. So, release the records. Of course, immediately following this ruling, Donald Trump appealed it. They're going to make sure this goes to the highest court in the land if they need to do that to prevent those records from being released. And one of the things we also learned this week was they think that he's trying to prevent the release of the outtakes of the video that he filmed condemning the Capitol rioters, which even the one they put out wasn't really even him condemning them. It was just saying, hey, we love you, but you need to go home. And if that's the one they went with, then what did they cut? I want to see that footage. I want to see those outtakes. I want to see what he had to say. Because I guarantee you that's just as damning as anything else in those documents. The other legal setback for Donald Trump this week was when a Superior Court judge in Washington, D.C. ruled that a lawsuit filed by District of Columbia's district attorney, Carl Racine, said, yeah, your lawsuit against the Trump inaugural committee can move forward. Now, in case you haven't been following along on that story, because I know there's a lot of Trump lawsuit news out there, this one's a big one. And it's one that really hasn't gotten the coverage of quite literally any of the other lawsuits that Donald Trump is facing. What happened in this suit is it is alleged by Racine in this lawsuit that the Trump Inaugural Committee, which is set up as a 501c3 nonprofit organization, because that's how inaugural committees have to be set up, that they essentially illegally funneled money into Donald Trump's pockets by overpaying for the use of spaces at Trump International Hotel right there in Washington, D.C. That is where a lot of the Trump inaugural events were held. And it is believed that the hotel increased their rates because they knew that this was basically Trump paying Trump. The central figure in this, however, is not Donald Trump. It's Ivanka Trump. Ivanka Trump gave a deposition recently where she tried to claim stupidity. She tried to say, listen, I wasn't involved in any of the planning here. I didn't know about the booking of events. I didn't know about anything. But then internal documents were revealed that showed that Ivanka did, in fact, have a heavy hand in planning the events, down to the menus. She approved the menus at these events and tried to tell people during the deposition that I had nothing to do with any of this. I don't know who any of these folks are. She actually tried to say she didn't know who some of them were. And then the emails came out where she's communicating with them directly. So that's bad news that that's moving forward, especially because we also know that comparative to other hotels in the area at the same time, Trump's rates were far higher, so they could have saved money going to a different group. We also know that compared to that time of year for other years, the rates at Trump's hotel were significantly higher as well. So it is obvious they raised the rates. The only question that the prosecutors essentially have to prove here is that the rates were specifically raised in order to get more money from the nonprofit Trump Inaugural Committee and put it into Donald Trump's profits. That is the central legal argument. And this week, the judge said there's enough there for the case to move forward. So that's something we're going to be keeping an eye on. Hopefully, it goes Carl Racine's way. I think it's fairly obvious what happened. You know, this is kind of what the Trump organization, the Trump family does. So best of luck with that case. And I hope it goes in Racine's favor. I've been saying for a long time that the Democratic Party is a bit of a messaging problem. They're a little slow to respond. They don't quite get out there and make the attacks that they need to be making. Luckily, there's a phenomenal group out there right now called Midas Touch, and they're kind of picking up all this slack that I felt the Democratic Party has been creating for far too long. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce you to Ben, Brett, and Jordy Misalas. Guys, thank you so much for being there, being here, I guess. And I want to just start, Midas Touch, you guys put out phenomenal videos. You've got a wonderful new film you helped put out there called The Supporters. But let's go to the very beginning. How did Midas Touch start?
From the very beginning, it started in quarantine. It started as the pandemic reached our shores. My background is I'm a practicing lawyer and litigator. Brett is a digital media, runs social media channels for a basketball league, and he used to have a social media position at The Ellen Show, and he won 2 Emmys for his work there. Jordy's got a background as a marketing exec, and he's an award-winning marketer. So we were all in our jobs, and we were either quarantined or furloughed or all those things that were going on during that time period, and we started being able to watch what's on the news and really focus on the state of the country. You know, when we were so busy with our jobs and everything, sometimes you just get into a normal habit and you just kind of tune it out. And then when we were there, we literally saw the country unraveling before our eyes. And we just started talking about it, you know, in text messages as we were kind of scared as just brothers who love each other. Like, hey, what are we going to do? Like we're nervous for survival. And with all the crazy things that Trump was saying on the press conferences in that time period and pretty much all time periods, but particularly that time period, we were like, what the hell is going on? Like, we have to do something. And so we started off like, hey, maybe we should just do a blog and just kind of combine our talents to turn our fears and our behind the scenes passions into something publicly facing. And the kind of works we did in our kind of corporate worlds of law and editing and marketing kind of combine those talents. And so we started off with, you know, 0 followers, basically, and in a blog. We ended up doing a video called Are You Better Off, which basically used Reagan's theme, you know, from the 80s. Are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? That video got 1 million views, like it just took off. Like, well, maybe we should be focused on these videos. We did another video called Trump the Snake, and that video got millions and millions of views. I think it's close to 10 plus million views right now or right around there. And so we hit this cadence of like, what do we do? And then this started becoming into something more than just like a hobby that we were doing. And it was like, this is what we want to dedicate our lives to. And then that became Midas Touch, basically. You know, we had to Google, like, what do we do now? Like, can we get one billboard up? Google, what's a political action committee and how do you structure these things? Like the most organic of organic levels. And we built this thing from the ground up. We've done over 1,000 videos now, probably close to 2 billion views across all of our videos when you aggregate the views. A podcast network where we have multiple podcasts now. We still do all the videos and we've, you know, done these incredible door knocking campaigns and everything across the country. So that's the short and long story of it.
And, you know, it's really great, too, because as you point out, you know, the door knocking campaign, you aren't just out there creating content. You're actually out there doing something. You're out there making a difference. You're getting people involved. And what I love about the videos, you know, there's a lot of humor to them as well. But it is exceptionally educational. And I think, you know, just 2 days ago, you guys put out this video because Kellyanne Conway goes on Fox News. And she says, hey, during the Trump administration, there were no supply chain shortages at all. Everything was cool. Everything was great. So you guys put together this wonderful video in a very short amount of time, showing all these pictures, showing other clips, showing headlines of all of these supply chain shortages that we experienced during the Trump year of the pandemic. And the reason I feel like that is so powerful is because Kellyanne Conway goes on Fox News and she tells this lie and nobody pushes back on it. You know, nobody on the network pushes back. The Democratic Party is just like, ah, whatever. She's a loon on Fox News. But people watch that and they believe her, you know, when she goes out there and rewrites history. So that's why it is important to call these things out like you guys did with this video. And I absolutely love it. You guys did a wonderful job with that.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. The rapid response stuff had really become our bread and butter, especially during the campaign. We'd be turning around these videos within 2 or 3 hours after that would happen. And our whole goal was really, like you said, there's nobody out there who's taking the oxygen out of their messages. They just get to run free, run their mouths on Fox News. It gets repeated ad nauseum. And by the way, even this quote unquote liberal media will just repeat those claims in different ways, or they won't push back enough and the party infrastructure won't push back enough. So we're like, let's just counter that with the truth, you know? And in the beginning, it was actually kind of by necessity. We're like, you know, how do you make these videos. Like, we don't have a voiceover person. Like, you know, do you have to pay for that? Like, we didn't even know. So our whole kind of strategy was developed around those limitations, which often creativity, where creativity stems from. And so with those limitations, we decided, you know what, let's use their own words against them. Let's use their own words and compare them with actual images of what's happening against them. And the irony of the Kellyanne comments is that it's kind of the whole reason we started Midas Touch, because, you know, cuss, our country was in such dire straits. Like, we remember all that stuff so vividly. You know, I remember not being able to get new toilet paper for months. I remember not being able to find canned goods at the store. I remember having to order from like specialty shops to get basic things. Like, this was a real issue that existed. And I think Democrats, I think we need to be constantly reminding people just of how bad things were under Trump, because, you know, we need to be our own greatest advocates here, you know, because the media is never going to be our advocates. We need to take this on ourselves to say, yeah, actually, you know, President Biden is actually taking us out of this, you know, out of this pandemic, and we are finally recovering here, and things are far better than those refrigerated morgues that were on the streets last year. Things are far better right now than completely empty shelves and hand sanitizer on Amazon for $100 a pop that you had to get imported from outside the country. Things are immeasurably better right now in every way, but people have short, attention spans and memory. And so we need to continue to remind people about that.
Well, you know, it is something to remind people too, because, okay, look, yes, there's major supply chain problems right now. It needs to be addressed and it does need to be fixed. But would you rather be in the position today where you can't buy toys for Christmas, or you want to be where you were 18 months ago when you couldn't wipe your ass? You know,
exactly.
Which one of those is worse to you? Because I'm pretty sure I know which one I would rather be in. And that's what we're looking at right now. We had real essential items that you couldn't purchase. I remember I walked into CVS one time in the early days of this, and the guy behind the counter goes, "Hey, we just got some Clorox wipes in. If you want one, it's a limit one per customer." And I was like, hell yeah, give them to me, because I have none. But
yeah,
that's how crazy it was. And people selling toilet paper out of the back of their cars, and they want to act like things are worse now. I mean, there were meat shortages. There was, all paper products were gone. All pasta. You couldn't buy pasta in the United States.
It was terrifying. You bring up such an excellent point. In March of 2020, when things really start to first hit, you know, hit the fan, I went to my local grocery store. At that time, I was living in Brooklyn. Chaos. Like, nothing on the shelves. Everyone either had stack carts or was running around just, like, grabbing items. And I was checking out, and the cashier kind of just looked at me, and, like, I didn't have that many items. He's like, "Just go." I'm like, What do you mean? I have to pay for this. He goes, it's the end of the world. Just go.
I was thinking this, Jordy. Just look at this. Look at December versus January with the vaccinations of a Trump administration, mm-hmm, versus a Biden administration in deploying vaccines. That's your biggest tell right there. I don't think if Trump was the president right now, there would be, most people would maybe be getting their first shot, possibly. That's, you know, and how do we know this? The most essential of essential items, the PPE, was not available under Trump. There was no testing there, and they were gaslighting us, which was, to your point, a lot of the videos we would do is we would just use their words, then we would show the truth. We would use their words, and then we would show the truth. We would use their words and show the truth about that they were gaslighting this country to mass graves.
And, you know, that's so wonderful, too, because you don't have to sit there and a lot of people, and I do this every day, and I know how it's like. You say that, you show the stupid thing they say, or you read the quote, and then we go into our own little diatribe. Oh, they're wrong. And here, but you guys do it with pictures. You guys do it with these quick little videos that you get out there again at just rapid fire succession. And it's so powerful. You don't have to add all this, you know, extra commentary. You don't have to talk about it for 20 minutes, you know, and keep it going long after you probably should have stopped talking, that we see some folks do. No offense to, you know, my fellow leftist talkers. But yeah, sometimes they go a little long winded with some of these issues. But I love, love, love all of the stuff you guys are putting out. And it was midsummer. I was doing an interview on John Melendez's show, and we were having the conversation about the Democratic messaging. And he goes, well, have you heard of this group Midas Touch? And I said, yeah, I think I've seen them on Twitter. And he goes, oh, no. You have to watch her. You have to be totally wrong. They're absolutely wonderful. And so that's when I really started paying attention to what you guys are doing. And to me, it really filled this gaping hole that we have seen for far too long. And it's something we've been hitting on here at Ring of Fire for well over a decade. It's just, we need to counter the BS. And I feel like sometimes the Democratic Party itself thinks, no, we're above that. We don't have to worry when somebody says something stupid on Fox. We don't have to worry when they're out there attacking Big Bird. But you do, because these are real issues to the people watching these networks. And so you do have to counter it. You have to put something out there. And that's what you guys are doing so beautifully.
Thanks. And I want to give a shout out to John for the kind words and to the Ring of Fire audience and for you for all the love that you've shown us. I mean, you know, our followers all the time are like, we saw your Ring of Fire. And that's one of the coolest things to us, like ever, you know, when we find that out. So thank you so much. And no, I mean, it's true. And I think what happens is if you don't counter the messaging and you don't counter the messaging quickly, you leave a vacuum, which could then be filled by the BS of the right. And then they go into 10 times double down, you know, whatever mode of pouncing on that vacuum and filling it with their disinformation. And so I think we most recently probably all saw this in Virginia with the CRT education, all that stuff. I mean, Democrats got railroaded by that because it took them far too long to respond to that. They were like, oh, it's not even taught in Virginia schools. Let's not even talk about it. You know, like people know it's not taught there. But while just kind of ignoring it with that framing, they allowed Youngkin and the Republicans to really frame the narrative there in a way that shifted the election in the final weeks drastically. And that's why, you know, we hope kind of everybody gets on board with this counter messaging and approaches things quickly, because right now we're in a world of rapid response. We're in a world where people are getting our news from YouTube. We're in a world where people are getting our news from Twitter, even more so than from the mainstream networks. So if we're not going to combat them on that turf, then who is, you know?
And I think, Brett, also in addition to the rapid response, though, we also go on the offensive and mm-hmm. we also frame language. And that's equally, if not more important, because traditionally Democrats, progressives have had to respond to CRT and Big Bird. That's all important. But also framing the Republicans as not conservative. I don't use the term conservative because there's nothing conservative about them. You know, we refer to them as the GQP, you know, as the Trumpist cult, Republicans, the radical right, you know, and just the language is important. And I like to frame the coalition that we're building as a pro-democracy progressive coalition, small d democracy as well, and that the other side is a fascist party that wants to elect a dictator. And those dichotomies are important, because all my views line up as a liberal and a progressive person, but also the way the language has been weaponized over time, lots of Americans, if you just even think of the phrasing of it, like conservative, like I'm conserving something. And that just little stuff like that is puts us in a disadvantage, honestly, to start. So reframing these discussions, I think, is also a very important part of what we can do to move the discussions forward.
We see a lot of that with the language that these Republicans are using right now. Everything is communist. Everything is socialist. And then, you know, people on the left say, OK, well, you're a fascist. Look, most people in this country don't even know what fascism really is. They know it's bad, right? They know it's bad, but they know what communism is, you know? And so the communism charge does ring better with their audience than us saying fascist, you know, rings with their audience. But at the same time, they also have no comprehension that there's a difference between socialism, fascism, communism. They just throw out an ism, whether it's, you know, even Nazism, to describe the left. And it works so well with their base. And so that's a great point, that we've got to be on the offensive with this language. And we can't be afraid of hurting people's feelings. We don't need to make nice with people who are putting out videos of themselves killing AOC. You know, we have to understand that this is always a fight. It's a fight that's never going to go away. You know, there's always going to be this dichotomy of, you know, left versus right. Even if we have multiple parties, you know, there's still a left versus right in this country. And if we're not out there actively fighting that, if we're not refuting their points, if we're not on top of everything they do, they win the day. And we saw that, like you pointed out, last week, just last week it happened. And so that's why this is so important.
Yeah, and we need fighters on our side, you know? That's that, and I think that's what people want. And I think, you know, if I could, you know, if I were to say one thing that is resembling of anything positive about Trump, it's that he is a fighter, or he has an image of a fighter, and people like that. Now, he was a fighter for evil, but we need to be fighters for good, you know? And that's what we hope to be. We, you know, Jordy, what's your phrase?
Unapologetically pro-democracy.
And progressives punch back. Because we need to have that on our side. We need to have that heat on our side where we're actually going after these people in a big way, in an aggressive way, and not try to be like, oh, you know what, we're, like you said, we're above it. You know, it's, hey, we don't want to be mean. People might take it the wrong way. What if we go too negative? Like, no, we're going to deliver it. We're going to do it with the truth, but we're going to be just unapologetic about it, you know?
And that's the biggest thing, right? You hit on that. We're going to do it with the truth. What Trump did so well in 2015 and 16 is he weaponized social media. Him and his base totally, you know, took that over. And it honestly got him elected at the end of the day. We like to say, you know, battles, you know, from back in the day were fought on physical battlefields. Now they're fought in the digital landscape. And if you're not winning that battle in the digital and social spaces, then you might, you know, not as well even show up.
So one of the things I also wanted to talk about, there's a new film out called The Supporters. It's starring and was directed by the folks over at The Good Liars, who absolutely wonderful group as well. But you guys were also involved in this film. So talk about, without giving too much away, obviously, because there's a lot of things in it. People, you have to just go watch this. It is on the Midas Touch YouTube. But without giving too much away about it, talk about your involvement with this particular film.
We're the movie studio in this. And so I guess as the movie studio, When you arm us and kind of our philosophy into certain things, we're like, yeah, let's just release it for free and let everybody watch it and let everybody enjoy it. So that may be the first mistake of being a movie studio, but at the great piece of it, we want to share this movie with everybody. And it was such a good movie. And right now about 500,000 people have seen the movie. By the way, if 500,000 people saw a movie on a TV network, that would be a hit. Like, if you look at ratings, that would put us in the top 100 of TV shows. But, you know, I was like, yeah, let's let everybody watch it. And everybody, you sure? I'm like, yeah, let's let people watch it. But it's done in the style of Borat, with kind of a mockumentary. But there are real interactions with politicians during the 2020 election, through COVID and the insurrection. And in fact, the filming actually took place during the insurrection, and it follows these two MAGA, they're actors, but they're playing two MAGA podcasters who want to get their podcast on Fox News. And they think to do that, they have to read Trump's book, How to Make a Deal. And so they follow follow his 10 steps as they then interview all of these politicians, both Democratic and Republican politicians, before ultimately discovering a lot about themselves. But hilarity ensues as they have interactions with Biden and Yang and Don Jr. and a whole cast of characters. They even discover who Q is on the
If you want to know who the real QAnon is, this is your chance to find out who the real Q is.
The importance there of mixing humor with a very serious and smart message to connect to people is important, you know. And I think if we would have paywalled this thing, you know, and charged 10-15 bucks, we probably could have made not an insignificant amount of money based on the demand for it. But we really want a movie like this, like, to spread. We want people to watch this. We want people who wouldn't be in the echo chamber to see this and learn and laugh through it. So that's kind of the philosophy about it as I totally destroy my business bona fides on this thing.
You know, there are a lot of interactions in the movie, especially some with the Democratic candidates as they travel to Iowa. And again, I don't want to give too much away because it's just too funny. You have to see it to fully appreciate it. But I also, I look at this, I wonder, how did this not make the news when this actually happened? Because these were pretty significant. I mean, I don't want people to think like, oh, okay, they interacted. They probably saw. No, no, no. I mean, talking about totally interrupting multiple different events, including one with Donald Trump, by the way. You know, one of his last rallies, you know, where, my God, it's just so remarkable that the news cycle totally overlooked all of these wonderfully hilarious things happening, which I guess, you know, is a testament to the media. But it also shows you how good these guys were at getting into these situations.
You know what it is, too, I think, though? I think it's the same reason why they're good at getting in these events and getting so close to the candidates. It's that they sort of like blend in at these events when they go to like Iowa. Like they could be Trump supporters, you know, when they're wearing their Trump hats. Like they don't look really any different from the rest of the Trump supporters in that audience.
You know, so but they have that moment, right, Brett, where they, without giving too much away, where they're at a Black Lives Matter rally and they reflect on like, well, why is everybody upset? You're telling me like they can't just do what we do and just go talk to random politicians and like, you know, and there's like a real smart and sophisticated undertone to it. Like to me, if this movie was just the gimmicks, it wouldn't appeal to me. You know, totally. What's really here is that it's done at such a high level and it's so smart and you leave it and you really think like it leaves you just thinking like, wow, this is. Our country has a lot of work to do, but you also see how you can solve the problem. You look at Trumpism as the largest cult in the history, not just of the nation, but really in the history of the world. And what that is, that's spreading, why people are drawn to it, but how to counteract it.
And, you know, another thing that happens in the movie, and this isn't, you know, giving really any of the plot away, but sometimes when they're interacting with these, you know, Trump cultists here, how quickly they're able to get them into a frenzy is just absolutely remarkable. And it is very telling. And it's very smart, by the way. But it is so telling about the mentality of some of these people out there who are members of this Trump cult that at the drop of a hat, they can break out in a chant. They can all, you know, start burning their masks. They can, you know, do whatever it is because they're so easily impressionable. It really does just take one person to start doing this. And then it's all, you know, all the sheep are following. It's crazy.
It shows you the power of language too, right? And wanting to be kind of in an in-group and kind of that, you know, I was going to say like a herd mentality sort of, you know, of people all kind of wanting to get on the same page of something. And, you know, outside of this movie, also someone who we've worked with in the past is this guy, Walter Masterson. And he's also great at using language to like change the conversation a little bit. So like, you know, it's a bad example, but like, I remember he was interviewing some Trumpers and said something like, you know, do you really want this like socialist takeover of whatever? He got them to agree to like liberal policies by just calling their policy socialist.
No, you know? Not even that. He got to basically admit that actually fit the definition of communism. What we need to do is we need to start a collective, right? And what we need to do is we need the government to take over the pharmaceutical industry and take over Wall
the
Street
banks
and control all the instrumentalities. That's what we need. They're like, yeah.
But Jason and DeVron, they're the actors that who play Derek and Dale, the two main podcasters and supporters. And I mean, aside from them being just comedic geniuses and having just the biggest cojones ever to really go up and pull off the stunts, they're so smart. And the way that they are able to turn that switch and really get a politician or a Trump supporter to really react to something specific, I mean, it's so fascinating to see.
Well, it is fascinating. And also, again, you know, really terrifying at how easily, you know, these people do kind of hit this switch. But, you know, one thing I want to ask, obviously, we're a year out from the midterms. You guys have done such great work. What do you have planned? I mean, look, this is a big one. The Democrats are already kind of falling way behind here. Biden's approval rating, you know, below 40%. You know, personally, I think that's a little ridiculous. You know, I don't think he should be below 40%. And people know I'm not, you know, the biggest Biden fan out there. But I mean, come on. Anyway, so how are you guys going to help Democrats win in 2022? Because it is right. It's all on you guys. 100%. I'm placing that on you. So what you going to do?
We got to focus on the issues. You know, we got to focus on, you know, build back better sounds like something that like marketing gurus sit around at a conference room table and like, oh, three B's. It's a all good. Like, let's just tell the people, if you go through all of the issues that people actually care about and gave them like a blind test, whether it's on education, whether it's on healthcare, whether it's on foreign policy, like the withdrawal from Afghanistan, like 70% to 80% of the population are supporting progressive and democratic big D and small D, which now intertwine ideals. So what we really got to do is we got to go out there, and we can't take for granted that people know this stuff. We have to really frame the issues of, if you want this type of education, if you want this type of healthcare, we're the ones delivering it to you, not this other party that's focused on the billionaires. What they're going to do is just give tax cuts to the 1%. That's the only policy they stand for. And with their policies on COVID, we have to be direct. They're going to try to kill your children and kill your family. That's who these people are to the DeSantis's of the world. So we have to be clear and sharp on, you know, on that messaging. And we have to start now. You know, one of the issues that is concerning, though, is Republicans are on 24/7. They've got Fox News. If you look at the top 100 podcast charts, they've got the conservative, I shouldn't use the word, they've got the GQP kind of media in the top, you know, 10, top 20 of all podcasts all the time. So they're constantly campaigning. And then progressive Democrats, we're just like 2 months before, oh, shit, we got an election coming up. Hey, this community. Hey, that community. You support us, right? You support us because we're here for you and our policies make sense for you. And the communities don't feel the love because we're not embedded in the communities. We're not talking to the communities that we claim to help. And so they just don't feel the. So we have to go out there and be entrenched in the communities. I would love if all of the resources, you know, that Democrats spent did not go to all of these kind of bloated consultant infrastructure and really went into the field with real people who can talk to people like at the school board level of like that level of grassroots activity needs to happen. So it's a lot of pressure that it's all on us, but we'll do our part. But what we hope Midas Touch stands for, though, is really less about us and the three brothers. And we love what we do, but the community of people that we've built that call themselves the Midas Mighty is the true strength of the movement, that there's actually tens of thousands of people out there who like identify as part of a Midas community. They meet up, they talk about these ideas, they talk about these issues. And we just hope that our messaging just inspires other groups out there. Like, there are already such incredible local groups. We see what Stacey Abrams was able to accomplish in Georgia. There's so many great community groups, Black and Brown community groups on the grassroots doing incredible work. And we can't take that work for granted. We have to support those groups' work. And people out there, we can't take for granted our democracy anymore. Like, we want anyone who follows Midas Touch to do their own little thing in their own little way. If that's sending 10 postcards, that's great. Do the 10 postcards. If it's starting a podcast, start a podcast. We just want to inspire people with our story that we started from zero followers to being able to build this platform, as you can do it too. And our greatest success will be that there's 100 Midas Touches out there. Like, that's why we make the movie available for free. I don't view this as a competitive like space of like, how do I squash competition? I want there to be so much competition and so much information out there that we just radiate democracy. And frankly, if Midas Touch becomes,
you know, just a concept and a theme, and we're made less relevant because there's more groups fighting for democracy, so be it. Like, I want our country to win first and foremost.
So it's, you know, a lot like the Batman mentality. You know, it's just a symbol. Anybody can be the symbol. And I love that. I really do love that. That is a great way to do this. So real quick here, tell everybody how they can support you, how they can follow you, throw out all your social medias. What you got?
So if you want to chip in to support Midas Touch as an entity and support our efforts on the ground, support our videos and all of our activism, you can go to MidasTouch.com. That's MeidasTouch.com. And to watch, you know, I know I'm a little biased, but to watch the comedy movie of the year that if you haven't seen, you are missing out on, go to thesupportersmovie.com. That's thesupportersmovie.com. And as Ben said, we gave it away for free, so you don't even have to worry about it. So you can go to thesupportersmovie.com. And while you're there, you can stream it. You could download it. And if you love the movie, there is an option to chip in and support the filmmakers, but no obligation at all. But if you love it, you know, feel free to throw in a couple bucks to support the movie. But thesupportersmovie.com, and follow us across all social media at Midas Touch.
Jordy, Brett, Ben, thank you for taking time to talk to me today. You're doing wonderful work. I've probably kept you from making like three videos in the time I had you on here. So God only knows how far behind we are on the messaging now. But no, y'all do such good work. I can't wait to see what you have in store. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
That's it for this week's Ring of Fire. But don't forget, you can help support the show and, of course, get exclusive access to the members-only content. Go to ROFpodcast.com and sign up. Become a monthly member. You get the full show ad-free. It's a wonderful thing. You can hear some great interviews with great people. You can also get Ring of Fire every single day by going to our YouTube channel and subscribing. YouTube.com/TheRingOfFire. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Ring of Fire Media. And you can support us on Patreon by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/TheRingOfFire. You can also become a member on our YouTube channel. It's the same tiers on both Patreon and YouTube. So if you want to become a member, get exclusive access to videos you cannot see anywhere else, not available to the general public, youtube.com/TheRingOfFire or patreon.com/TheRingOfFire. I'm Farron Cousins, and you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Farron Balanced. And thank you so much for listening. Talk to you again next week.